I'm Mark Matienzo. I'm an applications developer with the NYPL Labs of the Digital Experience Group at the New York Public Library. And I come to you as I have a rich history in my relatively young career as a cataloger of rare materials, as an archivist, and now as a programmer. And that's kind of how I approached this. When Merrily Prophet initially approached me about this, I was thinking a lot about my personal frustrations with EAD in each of those roles and right now, and sort of just issues that I've had with description in general. And this really, really, my talk is very much informed like that about that. So I started thinking a lot about technical issues, but I tried not to make my talk technical because I know that technical talks for a varied audience can be very, very boring. And so I think that I'm ready to start. I don't know why this thing just popped up here. But as I said, this is the title of my talk, Cheeseburgers with Everything, Context, Content, and Connections in Archival Description. And I'm going to start out with an exercise that shouldn't prove too challenging except for the fact that we're all archivists. That said, all I ask in addition is that you remember to smile, because I know sometimes we have issues with being not too social. And I have thought back and forth about whether I should actually make people do this, but I'm going to. Ask the person next to you the following question. What is more important, context or content? Remember their answer and what your reaction to it was. Okay, Jackie says you're done. So I'm going to step back a bit and have us ask ourselves why or. The debate over context versus content in the archival profession has a long history, occurring most notably in terms of the role of each in appraisal. Mark Green and Frank Bowles argue in their article, Confusing the Bun for the Burger, Rehabilitating the Role of Content in the Archival Context, that users of archives are interested in finding the beef, that is, the information, and view the bun or the record as little more than a necessary container. Why not everything? Following Bowles and Green, I ask an even more general question. Why do we have to prioritize one over the other? In other words, why not everything? Different kinds of buns have changed my experience with burgers. Especially the mysterious middle bun of the ubiquitous Big Mac, which in many ways is a burger with everything. Enough about burgers. The metaphor won't get us any further, for now. What are the connections between context and content, or more generally, the connections between pockets of information? This was recognized very, very early on, before the World Wide Web, and even before the internet was available to the average person. In 1974, Ted Nelson used the word intertwingularity to describe this phenomenon. In his words, everything is deeply intertwingled. In an important sense, there are no subjects at all. There is only all knowledge, since the cross-connections among the myriad topics of the world simply cannot be divided up neatly. Nelson's characterization of intertwingularity leads to another epigram concerning how our best efforts at classification sometimes fail. As David Weinberger writes in his book, Everything is Miscellaneous, the human tendency to classify things causes the size of the miscellaneous piles to grow. There are times that things just don't fit well, no matter how hard we try to cram them into where we think they should go. For example, he writes of the gin-flavored floss that someone gave you as a joke, seeming out of place on the top shelf of the bathroom cabinet. Given somewhat recent discussions on the archives listserv about the storage and preservation of whiskey as part of archival collections, I know we've run into similar problems. Weinberger has also suggested that everything is metadata in the digital world. Digital information defies the analog requirement of being a surrogate for the described item. We can potentially add full-text searching to any textual object. In addition, tagging allows individuals to label items or aggregations in a way that makes sense to them. For Weinberger, this interconnectedness of information leads to virtuous messiness in the digital realm. The relationships between pockets of information, including hyperlinks, formalized linked data such as RDF, and tags, are layered accretions of meaning that are unowned by a single actor. The items underneath, however, are essentially untouched. Any of these layers of meaning can be peeled away. While Weinberger states that everything is metadata, he also recognizes that no particular way of understanding something is inherently more valuable than any other. Each method has its use. Accordingly, we should ensure that we keep creating high-quality, structured metadata in addition to making sure that our content is indexable on a bulk level. We can't predict how users will find things. I've realized that everything ain't done in terms of the possibilities of working with EAD or even just generally with the potential directions of describing archival materials. I'd now like to discuss a few potential directions rooted in practical instances. The possibilities for changing the way we search for collections is limitless. We have dreamed of having unified search interfaces for library, archival, and museum collections. In addition, some of us hope of having a way for users to drill down to the miscellaneous stuff that they want. This is a screenshot of CIRIS, which is the Smithsonian integrated collection search tool. It allows you to search across library materials, archival collections, images, museum inventories, essentially almost any sort of content that the Smithsonian has indexed in some way. You can see along the left-hand side here the different media types, the different, in this case, type refers what we usually think of as the genre of an object, and down here, topic kind of generally refers to subjects. CIRIS uses faceted classification to allow you to narrow your search results down based on specific criteria, including the type of item, topic, names, and associated with the collection. In this case, I started with a result set of all the records in CIRIS, and now I'm learning based on the type of material. The numbers next to the specific terms indicate the number of records containing that term. And we can see that we can drill down into miscellany very easily. This result set based on item type, it was sorted first by the number of items with that and then alphabetically. I've gone all the way down to the end of the alphabet and to all the items that only have all the types that only have one item associated with them. So you can really see the miscellany in this. We've got tracing cloth, travel vouchers, vases, Vietnam veterans, memorial chapels, and wheelbarrows. In this case, we found the only record in CIRIS for a wheelbarrow. Of course, I couldn't have gone by without searching for a term that's inspiring my extended metaphor, cheeseburgers. These are two records for items from art inventories. Both are sculptures. And you get to see how things were really classified in this case. The topic for both of these are in some sort of, I believe it's a Smithsonian internal classifications, object, foodstuff, sandwich. It's arguable how useful that is in terms of, you know, having that sort of classification to that, you know, making that available to the average user. But in this case, you know, if somebody really wanted to find everything that represented a sandwich in the Smithsonian, they could. In addition, archivists are now struggling with how to deal with the contributions of users made possible by Web 2.0. In the session, we're not the destination, we're the journey. Helena Zinkum discussed how Library of Congress is using comments on images that they've posted to Flickr to update metadata. By now, all of us have probably also seen the Polar Bear Project from the University of Michigan. But is there a way to make user contributions less obtrusive? In short, yes. This is an online version of the Django book. Django is a web application framework written in the programming language Python. And this book basically teaches you start to finish how to use this application framework to write web applications. Users can comment on any section of the book, and the text balloons on the left indicate the number of comments for each section. Note that the comments don't actually appear until you click on a specific section. This maintains the layered aspect of digital information, as suggested by David Weinberger. And obviously, this could be applied to online finding aids just as well. I just needed to give a thoughtful pause right there. Ideally, we would also like to see the relationships in our descriptive data beyond seeing the association of controlled access terms in our text. If you've heard of the semantic web, this is what it's all about, allowing us to maintain explicit connections to various pockets of data. The UK Archival Thesaurus uses resource description framework and simple knowledge organization systems data models to maintain a controlled vocabulary for subject-based access to archival collections. This RDF graph shows the connections between a sample set of terms. And you can see preferred labels, alternate labels, how terms are related, and so forth. Agrippa, the online catalog of the Archive and Museum of Flemish Cultural Life in Antwerp, contains descriptive metadata about archival materials, records creators, and the relationships between them. The data of these relationships are stored as RDF triples. Agrippa users can navigate the social networks created by correspondence between individuals and organizations. And there, I have to credit Raf Guns at the University of Antwerp for this image. He's one of the first people who's really been investigating the semantic networks, the social network aspects of archival semantic data. And this is actually just representing one network of correspondence from that data set. Now that we've looked into possibilities, I'd like to conclude with a discussion of the implications of taking on these challenges. Such departures will require us, in some cases, to depart radically from some established conventions of archivy, depending on how we apply them. This work requires integration on several levels. For cross-collection searching, archivists responsible for description need to work with their peers in the library and museum communities, both within and outside their institution. In addition, we need to look towards integrating multiple metadata formats into a single record. XML allows you to combine elements from different schemas, and why are we barely scraping by with the use of encoding analogs? To do work like this, archivists need to move away from the document-centered model used for metadata. In the US, our encoded finding aids are not at a point where we can easily reuse data across multiple systems. We need to stop our obsession with a finding aid. We can present the same information, but we need to do so in a way that makes sense both to human and computer agents. Finally, we need to understand our users, no matter who they are and how intentional their interaction is with our collections. Doing so will allow us to understand how they view and work with our metadata collections and the interfaces that provide access to both. In addition, we also really need to recognize this huge gap in resource discovery that involves both archivists responsible for description and those responsible for reference and access. One of the things that I found most frustrating this year about SAA is that description and reference and outreach met at the same time. So I really wanted to start thinking about how we can address these issues on a larger scale, but just in terms of logistics, it was impossible this year. Anyhow, thank you. And here's an image of Two Cheeseburgers with Everything by Klaus Ohlenberg. There's my contact information.